For WKMS News, I'm Taylor Inman. It's an interesting time to be in the business of economic development. Jobless rates are low, concerns continue over trade tariffs, and immigration policy debates prompt worry over agricultural workforce. Kentucky's Cabinet for Economic Development Secretary Terry Gill has been at the job for a little more than a year and a half. This is his first foray into public service work. Chad Lampe has this conversation with Gill, who visited Murray this week.
Kentucky continues to record really low jobless rates. So is it a challenge to find the folks to take these jobs that are continue to be created in the state?
The historically low unemployment rate can be a bit misleading. You know, it's right now about 3.9%. And you could argue that that's functionally zero, right? But you need to look at not only the unemployment rate, but also the labor participation rate, because that's sometimes a bit more telling. And Kentucky, and in particular this part of Kentucky, is still looking at a rate that's lower than the national average, around 53.6 or 59.6% versus around 64% nationally. So we have to get more people who are able-bodied, who can enter in the workforce, sort of off the sidelines and re-engage. So that's a particular challenge that we have in the state. But maybe more specific to your question is the jobs that are in demand, are the universities producing students that are credentialed in that particular line of work? And that's another reason why I'm here, is to do what I can to align those two things.
What type of jobs are we talking about that are going unfilled?
They tend to be technical in nature, software developers, engineers. Those technical trades tend to be the ones that are facing the biggest shortfall. Because Kentucky has seen such an upswing in growth in manufacturing, it's students who come into the workforce with the right soft skills and the right technical skills, the right critical thinking, those are also in demand. So we have companies who are saying, you know, we're looking for people who are willing to be trained specific to our process, but they have to have those base fundamentals. So a strong STEM background certainly helps.
As we see a growth in manufacturing, we've heard about the aluminum plant in northern Kentucky, and I believe an aluminum smelter in western Kentucky looks to be reopening operations. But tell me a bit about how some of these steel and aluminum tariffs could be impacting the manufacturing industries in Kentucky overall.
There's really two parts to that story. On the one hand, the Brady Industries, they are addressing a systemic shortage in the marketplace for series 5,000, 6,000, and 7,000 aluminum, which are specifically geared towards aerospace and automotive applications as we continue to see the need to unweight vehicles. So they have been potentially a beneficiary of the tariffs because they are entering into a particular marketplace that has been impacted to some degree by foreign manufactured product that comes into the U.S. at low market prices. To some degree, the reason why the smelters open up kind of northeast of here is because of the Section 232 legislation, which says because pure aluminum is so critical to defense applications, the nation needs to have sufficient supply of that and a healthy industrial base for that. And because so much of that has been imported at low market prices, those who were responsible for smelting could not make the economics work. So those are examples of companies that benefit. Now, there's a consequence of tariffs, which is the downstream manufacturers. An example would be GE Appliances in Louisville, Kentucky. The steel tariffs they're seeing, because in some cases they were sourcing product from a global network. So the tariffs create a burden to their cost structure that, quite honestly, is difficult for them to pass forward to the consumer. So there are clearly consequences to this, and there are winners and losers. And so we're really dealing with both in the state.
Kentucky is home to some really prominent lawmakers, specifically Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and how some of the EU countries are now looking to specifically target exports from, say, Wisconsin, where Paul Ryan's from, Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell's from. As somebody who's in the business of economic development, what do you tell companies that could be looking to locate in this state, in the Commonwealth, that, you know, if they're looking to export, that they won't come under any undue stress or export tariffs?
Well, there's no question that trade policy that's being dictated at the federal level has made my job a little bit more complicated. Having said that, I think this is a fluid situation. I think that we've seen the introduction of tariffs and which countries those tariffs apply to and which products those tariffs apply to has been fluid. I think this is part of a negotiation. And let's just assume if this is a baseball game, I'm going to say that we're in the seventh inning stretch here, right? I don't think that we can fully understand what the end game looks like. My guess is that the environment and the existence of tariffs will change between now and when this game ends. I think what they're trying to do is negotiate trade agreements that are fair and balanced, and this is part of that process, but I think eventually we'll get to an endpoint that looks different than where we are today.
It hasn't been that long ago. Kentucky became a right-to-work state, and I wondered if we've had enough time to assess any economic impact on Kentucky switching some of those employment obligations or lack thereof related to right-to-work.
It's an interesting question. I have firsthand experience with this because Brady Industries, the aluminum mill we just talked about, they came to Frankfurt and met with the governor and I the second week of February last year. They had, in some ways, made a decision to locate that operation in an adjacent state. Didn't want to, but until the right to work legislation was passed, they wouldn't consider the state. And so within weeks after the session ended, they decided to give Kentucky a chance, and lo and behold, we won that project. And that's a $1.5 billion investment in the state that really can transform that part of Kentucky. So I don't think there's any question that the $9.2 billion the state attracted last year, some of that clearly is related to the business climate, and part of the business climate obviously relates to right to work.
Conversely, what have we seen an impact on the union industry in Kentucky?
I don't believe so. I think that a consequence of a growing economy is that there are going to be people who choose to join unions and people who choose not to join unions. I think the issue here is that industry, business, has an opportunity to not feel coerced one way or the other. So I think what we're seeing here is that there's a bit of a rising tide, and I think it's going to benefit all companies.
Let's look at another industry. You're in far west Kentucky, which is a huge agricultural part of the state. And we hear the increased scrutiny on immigration law in the country. And a lot of the agriculture labor in Kentucky, at least far western Kentucky, is foreign labor, whether it's in the field or on poultry lines. Tell me about how you perceive some of the immigration conversations happening at the federal level impacting the farm workforce.
Well, we hear about workforce issues really in all 120 counties, and virtually every industry has a workforce concern. The challenge is, without getting sort of mired into a policy discussion about immigration law, the question is where do we find these workers? I don't profess to have the answer to that, but I can tell you workforce concerns continue to be the one thing that we spend a great deal of our time on.
What would you tell the average farmer here who may be concerned whether or not they'll get their H-2A workers next year or H-2B workers? If they're not finding those workers domestically, what would you tell them to ensure that they will have a workforce for the next growing season?
Well, I would suggest that the most important thing to do is be sure that they're communicating with their state representative and their congressional delegation, because I think that, quite honestly, is what moves policy. My experience, I've been in this role now for about a year and a half, but I come from the private sector. I have no prior experience in any form of state or federal government. This is my first experience on sort of this side of the fence. And I think what influences policy are businesses who are employing our residents. And when they're struggling, when they can't expand, when they can't compete for a new contract because they don't have workers, that makes a difference. And I would just suggest that making sure that at the local level and at the federal level, that those folks are being very, very, very vocal about what's working and what isn't working.
And is there a word you can offer to an entrepreneur if they're wanting to start a business in this part of the state? Where do you see, from the entire landscape of the state, where do you see growth potential for somebody wanting to start a business around here?
I can tell you that My cabinet is for the first time really taking a more critical view of how do we put more resources in play here. So I think the state's taking a strong interest in breathing new life and new ideas and new capital into that community. In this particular part of the state, I think there's great opportunity in ag tech in particular. I'll be working with our folks back in Frankfort to think about how we put more resources in play in this part of the state.
The Secretary for the Cabinet for Economic Development, Terry Gill, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.